Hi, everybody, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Hugo's There podcast. This time we're going to be talking some sports ball because I am thrilled to welcome Joe Poznanski to the podcast. Joe is the number one New York Times bestselling author of 7 books, including the bestsellers Why We Love Baseball and The Baseball 100 and Paterno, and has been named National Sports Writer of the Year by 5 different organizations. He writes at joepoznanski.com and currently lives in Charlotte, North Carolina with his family. So hi there, Joe. Thank you for joining me.
Great to be here. How are you doing?
Doing great. This is, like I said before we started recording, it's an absolute thrill to talk to you just because I'm used to listening to you on the podcast and reading your writing and your books. So yeah, really, really great. Now, normally, my podcast is focused on science fiction, but I do feel like, this is a bonus episode. Anything goes. But another thing that I do here is talk about award-winning books. And you have won 2 Casey Awards for The Baseball 100 and Why We Love Baseball, which is very cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Actually, 3, not to overstate myself, because my very first book, The Soul of Baseball, also won the Casey Award. So very cool. It's always cool to win awards. So, I have very mixed feelings about awards because there's part of me that's like, how do you really choose, right? Like, I mean, Right. Is they're really telling me this great book is better than that great book or whatever the case may be. But it is something to win an award for a book. It's different in the sense of that, when you're writing a book, you're just so locked in. You're in your own world. You're all by yourself. You're writing this stuff, and it was different with the Baseball 100 because I wrote that live, so like people actually got to see it as I was writing it.
Right.
But when I wrote Soul of Baseball, when I wrote Why We Love Baseball, my new one coming out in September, Why We Love Football, like nobody has seen it, right? Nobody knows anything. So you hear your editor tell you, "Oh, it's great," and your wife tells you, "It's great," and everybody tells you, but you have no idea that when it actually goes out into the world, how people are going to feel about it. So there is something really cool about winning. The Casey Award is incredibly cool. I just Why We Love Baseball just won the National Sports Media Association Sports Book of the Year from last year, which is really cool. And not to overstate, it makes me feel like I'm some sort of great thing or anything at all, because I definitely don't feel that. It is really cool to be, accepting an award for something that you spent months and months and months alone in a room doing without any sense of how it was going to hit the world, right? No real idea of how it was going to be once you got out there.
Yeah, and I have to imagine, too, with these, especially with the list-based books, right? You have to start with a pool of a lot more items to put on them and then kill your darlings on the way down. I want to talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of been a stunning process for me, which is weird. Because, I mean, there's part of me that's like, you go in, you know exactly what you're doing. And for Why We Love Baseball, it was, 50 greatest moments, most magical moments in baseball history. Baseball 100 was, super, direct at the 100 greatest players. Why We Love Football is the 100 sort of most magical moments in football history. So, so you have this idea and you think, okay, well, this is what it's going to be. And I'll have all of these moments and hopefully along the way, I'll come across some new moments and do this and it's going to be great. But each of these books, particularly football, like I went into football so confident that I knew what I was doing. I just did this with baseball. Football's a different sport. I get it. It's going to be a different kind of book. I'm going to write it differently, all of those things. But generally speaking, I know what I'm doing. And 3 months in, 4 months into that book, same way as 3 months, 4 months into the baseball, Why We Love Baseball book, I'm like, I don't even know that this is a book. I don't even get it. I have no idea. Like, I've got all these moments. I got 500 moments here, but I don't know how to turn this into a book. I don't know the different formats I'm going to use, the different ways I'm going to write. Like the baseball, Why We Love Baseball, in addition to the 50 moments, I have all of these little like micro lists of other moments, right? Five greatest catches, 5 greatest barehanded plays, 5 greatest home runs, whatever, And that's what I was going to do for football. Totally didn't work. Like, so I was just at different times at in all of these things. It seems, I mean, the idea and the hope is that you make it look easy, right? But there's crisis of confidence happen throughout the process in ways that I, having even done, you know, a few books now, it always surprises me. Every time it comes, I'll have that day where, you know, I've got the book, I've cut a deal with the publisher, I've got a deadline, and I'll say to my wife, you know, I have no idea how to do this book. I have no idea that this is going to actually get done. And she's learned over the years. I think in the early years that used to panic her, and now she's like, "Oh, you'll figure it out." And she just doesn't even.
Oh, we're worry at this part it. Of the process again, are
yeah,
we?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we're here. Okay, so that means for the next 3 months, I can't talk to you. I got it. You know, I mean, like that seems to be the way things are. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, when it comes to doing these lists, it's. You hope it looks easy. That's that. As I said before, that's the thing. You hope at the end it's like, oh, well, this is his list. He just came up with the list, but well, it's not easy in that way.
I was thinking about this in the context of Why We Love Football, because I had to claw Why We Love Baseball out of my neighbor's hands, so I could thumb through it last night and just make sure, you know, that I had some notes down. But there's something to, like, I can come up with, you know, the Elway drive or, you know, just like the headline of a moment, right? But where Why We Love Baseball shines, and I'm sure that it'll come through in Why We Love Football as well, is your ability to tell the story of that moment. And that's a completely different skill than to just say, oh, you know, that time that Ichiro threw out.
Right.
Terrence Long, I think.
Terrence Long, the Star Wars throw, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the great call by Dave Niehaus, right? That's part of the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Interestingly, and thank you for saying that, what's interesting, at least from my end, as from the writer's side, like that's the easy part for me, is like once I know what the book is, once I understand what these moments are meant to represent, like in Why We Love Baseball, the thing that was so key for me was that every single moment speak to the title of Why We Love Baseball. Yes. That was the only thing I cared about. I mean, at the end of the day, I didn't care how important the moment was. I didn't care how dramatic the moment was. I didn't like none of those things, even those, you know, obviously the most important moments are in the book and the most dramatic moments are in the book. What I wanted each singular moment to do was add to that answer of why it is that we love baseball. So moments needed to be funny and they needed to be goofy and they needed to be, you know, emotional and tear jerking and all these other things that I feel are such a big part of baseball. So for me, that part, once I know where the John Elway drive is in the football book, which I know exactly what it is. And I mean, I don't remember every single number for the book. In fact, I don't remember most of the numbers for the book, but I remember that number. That like John Elway's drive has a very specific role in my life. And so I know exactly what number I assigned to that. And I know exactly what I wrote about it. So, you know, that one is easy. The others are more difficult, but to me, that's the fun part. The fun part is going in and exploring and like, you know, what can I say about the helmet catch that hasn't been said before? What can I say about what can I say about the immaculate reception that hadn't been said before? What can I say about Barry Sanders that hasn't been said before? You know, so it's those things are super fun. And then it's about research and talking to people and exploring my own memories and my own thoughts about these moments and these players. So that's really fun. And not to say that it isn't all fun in its own way, it is, but for me, it's hard to explain because I don't know that it comes across. I hope some of it comes across to the reader, but it's hard to explain that I need the book to sort of tell me what it is. I need to understand what the book is in a larger way. Like I can tell somebody, I was telling people long before I was, you know, even had the list of what Why We Love Football was going to be, right? It's going to be the greatest moments in football history. That's easy, you know, but that I can't write it that way. I have to understand sort of the depths of what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to accomplish. And that means, where am I putting these moments and how are they, how long are these moments? How much am I writing about them? How much am I delving into the history of them? And on and on and on and on. And that was very different for football than it was for baseball, more so than I thought it would be.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, and I, by the way, folks, this is going to be basically an unstructured conversation where I just talked to Joe for a while. I have some notes down, but we're already off them and that's fine.
Sure.
One of the great things in Why We Love Baseball, and you mentioned it, right? I love that you couldn't help yourself, right? That it's 50 moments, but you also have the little interstitials where it's five unexpected home runs, where the piece of baseball masterpiece that is the Bartolo Colon home run, right? It's amazing. Although for me, I think one of my favorite unexpected home runs was Felix Hernandez homering off Johan Santana for a grand slam. And then they replayed it and like his eyes are closed.
It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. And I feel like I remember Santana looking at Felix and going, "Your eyes are closed." Because they're both from Venezuela. But yeah, there's something in baseball, right, where there are these little moments in any game that because it's a play, like, I don't know, because every pitch is its own story, right? You can find a lot of those moments. And I don't know in football if it's the same kind of thing.
It's different in that, and this took me a long time to sort of put into, I didn't even have to put it into words, just so that I understood it. Because I mean, I knew going in, baseball, football, very, very different.
Yeah.
And writing about them is very, very different. And reading about them is very different. They're different sports in ways that are obvious and also kind of profound. And trying to figure that out was part of my struggle to get this book to a place where I really wanted it to be. And then it was incredibly fun and not easy. There's never easy, but as easy as book writing can be. And one of the things that really came that I sort of came to understand is that in baseball, not only are there little moments that come along, because I think those do happen in football too.
Yeah.
But in baseball, you stop to appreciate them. You really stop because you have time. Mm-hmm. So when Adrian Beltre pulls the on deck circle closer to himself because the umpire tells him that he's not in the on deck circle.
And then gets ejected.
Like, that's awesome. And you can like spend a whole lot of time. It had nothing to do with the game. The Rangers were getting absolutely blown out in the game. Mm-hmm. So you, in baseball, you stop. And not only do you stop to think about it that day, you're still talking about it, you know, however many years later, you know, mm-hmm. something else happens like it. And you're like, oh, remember the time Adrian Beltre did, you know, so that's baseball. Baseball is looking back and looking forward and all of these things. Football's pretty looking forward specific. So something silly happens in the middle of a football game. Yeah, you'll notice it. Maybe you'll laugh. Maybe you, whatever. But that's next play now. You know, I mean, who's winning the game, and how are you going to come back, and how are you going to hold the lead, and every single play is its own like universe, and as soon as one touchdown is scored, you're on to the next thing, and I mean, it's a very, very forward moving game. I had a friend who explained it to me this way. He asked me, what is the biggest off the field play, moment in baseball every year? What is the biggest moment completely off the field? And we both agreed that it's the Hall of Fame induction, ceremony, which, you know, every year they have in July and is this gigantic celebration of the game. And he said, well, what is the biggest off-the-field moment in football? And you don't even have to think twice. You know it's the draft.
It's the draft,
NFL draft is so – it's the biggest thing in any sport, you know, off the field. And he said, yeah, so think about that. So the baseball is the Hall of Fame, and football, it's a draft. In baseball, we look back, and in football, we look forward. And
that's a great point.
It's such a good point, and it just had me thinking. So this football book, as I wrote it and when I figured out how to write it, it's very forward moving. It's the momentum of the book. I hope I wrote it the way, you know, it'll take you from beginning to end. Like it's I don't pause a lot. I don't stop to like sort of reminisce about like, oh, well this was, I mean, there's plenty of history in it and a lot of super fun connections and all these things, but you know, baseball, I could spend like, I could spend however long I spend writing about the first base coach during the, you know, the shot heard around the world. Right. Cause it's like, oh, I, you know, this is a famous thing and we have time. And in football, I wanted there to be sort of this tension, the clock is ticking, you know, that's what football is so much. And, so I definitely thought about it a lot that way. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, the title of football could have been, it could have been Why We Love and Hate Football, because football gets in us, inside us in ways that, but even more, it's like why we love football. And how is that different from baseball? I mean, that's, I don't write it that way, but I mean, that is sort of, there are a lot of things in there that you're like, oh, this is just very different than baseball. And that was really fun to explore.
Yeah. I will say that reading, I have to admit, I have not finished the Baseball 100 because as Michael Schur says, it's somewhere in the thousands of pages.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've barely finished it. Yeah.
You have to carry it around in a duffel bag.
Yes.
Or maybe a hand truck. But what happens is every now and then I'm like, what should I read? And then I'm like, oh, I'll read one of the chapters in the Baseball 100. With Why We Love Baseball, I found myself having to not even look at the title of the next chapter. anytime I got to one of the, you know, five, you know, pitching oddities or that kind of thing, I would automatically read those. But if I read the next thing, then it's possible this is one of the ones that I, you know, really wanted to read about, the Jose Canseco home run. Oh, and not the home run, the off his head home
ball
run.
Ball off his head, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't stop. So I had to discipline myself to like, don't look at that next chapter title, because otherwise you're never going to bed. So it was just compulsively readable. One exception, the first thing I did when I got the book is I'm like, okay, the David Freese game's got to be in here.
Sure.
And it's such a good chapter. And because that one for me, and this is something I think that is special about baseball, right? Almost everybody grows up playing baseball with their dad, right? Or with their parents. And then, you know, for me, like I grew up throwing the baseball in the backyard with my dad. Then I end up coaching my son's coach pitch baseball team. And so it's a generational thing. And so most of the moments that I think of from my baseball watching in the last 20 years are watching games with my son. And I remember we were watching that David Freese game and I thought, okay, David Freese hits the triple. No way the Rangers come back from this.
Right.
And then Josh Hamilton hits a home run. I'm like, okay, no way the Cardinals come back from this. And then the walk-off, we'll see you tomorrow night, just chills. So yeah.
Yeah, it an incredible moment, and I love. Thank you for saying all that. I love the way you chose to read the book. I've one of the real thrills of the success that these, you know, books have had is I have people come up to me all the time, and one thing that I feel is different about my books maybe than some others is that people read them all different ways. Like that's kind of a fun thing. I have had, you know, parents tell me that they read one chapter of the Baseball 100 to their, you know, their kids and, you know, before bed, or I've had people tell me they've read it backward, you know, and read Why We Love Baseball backward as well. Sometimes they do just pick out some, you know, chapter in the middle and just kind of, you know, just randomly put. And I love that. I mean, I want that. I want it to have like a narrative. If you do read it beginning to end, I mean, I think there is sort of a building process that comes, but I don't want it to be just that. I want people to say, hey, you know what is really special to me is the David Freese game. And so I want to read that. And now I'll go back to the beginning when I, you know, after that, or what's really special to me is the David Freese game. So I'm going to save that for last, whatever
right,
it is.
Right.
I love that there are so many different ways, hopefully, to read this kind of a book. And so I think that's great. And I tried to keep that very much in mind. You're trying to do many multiple things as an author. I think anytime you're writing a book, you want there to be you know, little Easter eggs for people, little secrets. There are a bunch of those in football. I can tell you there are a bunch of Easter eggs in there that are, you know, even beyond, like in the Baseball 100, one of the Easter eggs I did is that I would say probably, I counted it up one time. It's like a third of the players, with like 35 of the players have a very special number. Like the number is attached to them. So I wanted that to be an Easter egg for people, which I think for the most part it is. It also infuriates a bunch of people well, you know, as does everything about, you know, the Baseball 100.
I was going to say, I bet you got some pushback on the number.
Oh, yeah. every day. And still to this day, which, by the way, was part of the point.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I say that, I want people to come to me with saying, why is Jim Palmer not in this? You know, I want that. They're Jim Palmer fans, and they should not only feel whatever it is they feel reading the book, but they should be able to come to me and say, you're insane for leaving Jim Palmer out of this book. You're a nut job. You know, that's fine. I love that. And same thing with Why We Love Baseball. I had a bunch of different people still come up to me, and they have a moment they can't believe is not in the book, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, well, you know what that means to me, though? I mean, like, that means a lot to me, honestly. The interaction I've had with readers on these books has been so meaningful to me, but it means they care.
Yes.
They care what I think, you know? I mean, like for them to be so upset that, you know, somebody is not in either book is to say, you know, you should know better, right? I like reading you. I enjoy your stuff. And you really disappointed me. And I think that's kind of great, you know, in its own way. And it's an open conversation that way as well. And that will happen with football for sure. Because, as I say, there are Easter eggs in the book. So not only will there be the 100 greatest moments, there's other little things in the book that people will definitely be upset about. And it's going to be fun to deal with that, I think. But I do think when you're writing about stuff like this, when you're writing about baseball moments, just as an example, and you telling me the story about your dad and David Freese is a perfect example of this, it's really personal to us, you know? I mean, you don't know David Freese, right? It's not like you grew up with him and there's some sort of, you know.
I was rooting for the Rangers.
So. I was going to say, you're not a Cardinals fan. I can see what the Mariners had on your head. You're not a Cardinals fan. So, but yet that moment still is incredibly meaningful to you, and it's very personal to you. And I think that's, you know, that's really cool. And hopefully what I captured, at least a little bit. That's what I said. You know, I've been lucky enough to be all over the country talking about these books and talking to a lot of baseball fans. And what I always say to them is, like, this is all I can hope for. There's no way I could put every player you wanted in this book.
Yeah.
There's no way I could put every moment you wanted in this book. But hopefully, if I did it right and as well as I could, you'll see a little bit of yourself in there. And you know, if it's not the Jose Canseco ball bouncing off the head, then it's Steve Lyons dropping his pants. You know what I mean? It'll make you think of something else that is your funniest moment or whatever. So that's the idea.
I like too, that you, in the Baseball 100 and Why We Love Baseball, you mentioned, I think it was in one of the like the five meltdowns or something, that Roger Clemens throwing the bat at Mike Piazza. That gets a mention in both books. And I do agree. We don't talk about that enough.
Mike Schur, who I do the podcast with, as you know, and I think that might have been our original things we don't talk enough about. That is one of our sort of recurring gags on the podcast, is things we don't talk nearly enough about. And that might have been the first one. I mean, a guy threw a baseball bat at another player during the World Series and nothing happened. He just stayed in the game. He pitched. We don't talk about it. When you talk about either Mike Piazza or Roger Clemens, it rarely comes up. I'm like, what? how is this not literally on the front page of the New York Times every single day? We should never forget about this.
Yeah. I was watching, my wife and I were in Japan. I was in Japan for work, and then we were just about to come home, and I was watching that game on Japanese television with Japanese announcers. And, you know, I don't speak fluent Japanese by any means.
Right.
But you could hear the incredulity of the announcers at that moment. So.
Wow.
So kind of going back to that point about baseball looking backwards is like, it does have such a long history. And one thing I appreciate about both these books is that, you know, like my baseball fandom has mostly been as an adult. I was more of a football kid when I was like for watching on television.
Sure.
I loved playing baseball. You know, we went up to it wasn't even a sandlot. It was just a little ballpark, not far from my place. But it's hard to get a pickup game of baseball going,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
And so it was more like playground football was the thing. So since my fandom is kind of tied up in like late 90s through present, it's really fun to get a tour through all those earlier times and to bring in those other stories. And yeah, it's just, I love a history, right? Not the history, a history in 50 moments where it takes you through that kind of whole history of the game. And it's great.
Yeah, I think as particularly in baseball, I mean, there's a lot of this in the football book too, but particularly in baseball, it's such a game, so tied to history, and it's a living history. I mean, in a way that I don't think it is for any other sport, including football, in that right now you would talk to, you know, 100 baseball fans. If you were doing like a Family Feud, and the Family Feud question was, name a baseball player. Mm-hmm. And you surveyed 100 people and the top 7 answers are on the board. Babe Ruth is on that list.
Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Maybe number one. Probably would be number one. Because he's like, name any baseball player. So that's right now, that's 100 years after, you know, Babe Ruth played. So it's very much a living history. And of course, Ted Williams would probably be on that list. Joe DiMaggio would probably be on that list, you know, and like maybe Shohei and Mookie Betts would be like the only current players that even would make a list like that. I mean, I almost should do this as an experiment now that we're talking about it. This seems like a good podcast experiment where we survey 100 people and just ask them to name one baseball player. But you know, it's a very much a living history. Jackie Robinson is very much a living part of the game today, you know? And so it's one of those things where you want to, like, you don't want to be flooded with it. Like, I don't think that anybody wants to just be, like, there are great baseball history books that are about the game and how it did, you know, obviously the ultimate Ken Burns documentary, right? Which was brilliant. 9 parts, literally from the beginning of the game all the way up to modern day. So you can do that and that's great, but it's a whole other thing. But for me, it's more like, oh, so I'm writing about Albert Pujols and how does that draw me back to Stan Musial, right? Or how does that draw me back to Jimmy Fox or somebody else like that. And I think that's sort of embedded in the game. And it's certainly for me, it's a joy to write about that. You know, it's a joy to write about the history of the game because I love the history so much. But I also think that it's natural in the game in the way that if we were watching, you know, Patrick Mahomes play and suddenly, you know, Tony Romo on television was like, you know, Sammy Baugh used to do a lot of these same things. Like, nobody cares, you know? Right. I mean, it's not.
Yeah,
it's
he's just the same as Len Dawson from back in the day. No.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he's not.
Exactly. It's like, well, you know, not really. And football moves really fast. So you can barely even talk about, like, Joe Montana. I mean, that's not that long ago, but that feels ancient in football. And it won't be that long. Even now, sort of, Peyton Manning is almost too far, you know, too long ago. And Tom Brady, it's not going to be that much longer before he's going to be sort of ancient history in football. It just moves that fast. It's just a different game.
Yeah.
And our expectations for it are different. But in baseball, there's opportunities galore to really explore. And it's a very rich history, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been so many games played that kind of everything has happened, or certainly yeah. almost everything has happened.
Yeah. One of the Easter eggs that I noticed when I was thumbing through the book, I had written down like nice Easter egg in the Sid Bream chapter. Am I correct that it's a Fiddler on the Roof reference?
There is a Fiddler on the Roof okay. reference. Yeah, no, I
don't want to spoil it. I want people
yeah,
to
Yeah, no, I do. Like that's, there are certain things that I will admit I do just for myself. Mm. Just because I'm like, I think this is kind of funny, or I think this is, you know, it's 99.9997% of people who read the book will go right by it, and they'll right. never even think there's anything to it.
That's the best kind of Easter egg.
That's the best kind of Easter egg, where 0.000003% of them are like, this is awesome. You know, yeah. like, this is yeah. so great. I remember the comedian, the guy used to do the John Madden impersonations.
Caliendo?
Yeah, Frank Caliendo. I remember him once doing a gag on doing a bit where he said, listen, I'm about to do an impression that almost none of you are going to get. But the ones of you who do get it, it's going to be the greatest thing you've ever heard. And then he did Jim Rome. And I just thought that's, you know, I love that concept. I didn't love his yeah. Jim Rome, being honest, but I love that concept so much of just, you know, giving, hopefully there being, I guess I would think of it this way. I think of different kinds of readers while I'm writing, and I've got, they're just sort of my ideal readers. Right. And so I think about a reader who's reading Why We Love Baseball, who doesn't know anything about baseball and doesn't care. Like, I think about my mother, who's that way. She just doesn't know, doesn't care. She's read me for years. She still doesn't know and still doesn't care. So I want her to write it so that she will be entertained. But then I also think about the most, you know, frenetic, fanatical baseball fan there is. And I want to tell that person things they don't know about whatever the moments are. And I also want them to be entertained. And I want to give them little special treats that they might have just because they, you know, they know. And then I want people who happen to be in the sort of the pop culture world that I'm in, which is pretty weird and wide, you know, that there are Broadway musicals in there, and there are Bruce Springsteen songs in there, and there's television and movies and stuff. So I want them to also get something out of it. So I think about it that way. I do think about, you know, giving different readers something different to read and enjoy in the book.
Yeah. It's probably a good idea to mention the podcast. I mean, I know I'm, it's not like I'm going to give you a bump in listenership, but I do want to promote it to my listeners as well, just because it's very entertaining. I love the tagline, sports, drafts, nonsense. It's perfect.
That's pretty much what we do. As Mike has pointed out, we've stopped, more or less stopped doing drafts. And a lot of times we don't always talk about sports. So it's just complete nonsense. Just like that's yeah. the entire show.
I mean, I love it just because most of the time, if you're talking sports, it comes back to baseball at some point.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mike and I are both huge baseball fans. So I do it with Mike Shore, you know, creator of Parks and Recreation and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Good Place and mm-hmm. Rutherford Falls. And he's working on a new show that's coming out soon. And just a brilliant, brilliant baseball television mind. Not a brilliant baseball mind, as I've told him many times, but a brilliant – brilliant writer and television mind and just a brilliant guy and one of my best friends, obviously. So we've been doing the podcast, we say, since 1968. I don't think it's you know, probably not been consistent since then, but we've been doing it a long time. And we nobody, as we've tell people all the time, nobody should listen to it. Like there's, we have, if they were like, oh, what's your sort of ideal audience? Like, well, there'd be nobody listening if the world was an ideal place, because all it is it's the cliche of what a podcast is. It's two guys
talking,
just
yeah.
talking and yep. with no planning, no, you know, poor sound equipment, just two guys talking. That's all it is. But we have the best time. And I think that the reason it has worked is because people see that we do have the best time, right? It's like, mm-hmm. it would hopefully yeah. at its core, I mean, no matter what things we're talking about, no matter how wrong our opinions, no matter how nonsensical it is, we're enjoying it, you know, and we're inviting people in to hopefully enjoy it with us. And we do it for charity, which I would like to mention just because we've raised more than $250,000 for various charities, which is stunning to me beyond belief. Again, thinking, why does anybody even listen to this? And we've raised it for incredible causes. ALS has been our big cause, but we've raised money for the Veterans Community Project, for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, for various different local things. We've had listeners send in their suggestions, and so we've helped communities in, you know, a dozen cities, and you know, and it's not a lot. I mean, in a large sense, it's a lot. I mean, hopefully, that's a lot of money that we've raised, but it's a small amount, you know, 5,000 here, 10,000 there. But hopefully it's helpful. And we would do it anyway. Like, we often joke that we would, you know, that we're going to be old and we're just going to be sitting there like talking into like the telephone with each other, whatever the phone looks like in, you know, however many years. And we'll just be talking and we'll like, hey, are we recording this? Or we wouldn't be. Nobody will be listening. but we'll still be doing the podcast because that's what we like doing. So it really is just for fun for us. But it has been really fun and successful. And we actually just moved it. We are now doing it at Substack. We're doing it with a newsletter. And I only mention that as if people would like to go. It's the podcast.substack.com. And that's the podcast, P-O-S-C-A-S-T. And you can subscribe. It's free. Everything is free. But you can subscribe with all the money's going to charity. All of them are going to our various podcast charities that we're in, you know, we're engaging our readers to find the best charities as well as ALS. Research and development. So we'd love for people to, you know, to sign up and subscribe. Yeah. And you know, we have Substack has it where it's like, there's sort of a basic thing. So it's like $60 a year, is the amount to quote unquote subscribe. But on there, we've got a 50% off coupon, a 75% off coupon, and a 90% off coupon. So we don't care how much you donate. We really don't. We just anything that you'd like to donate would be incredibly, we'd be incredibly grateful for. And hopefully, you know, with all of this absurdity and nonsense, you know, every year we do this gigantic Christmas holiday draft where we we invite a bunch of our friends. Nick Offerman always joins us.
Somebody always throws a monkey wrench in things.
Somebody, more than one person usually. Usually it's former Major League pitcher Brandon McCarthy or Alan Sepinwall, Rolling Stone TV writer, or Jason Kander, who is done a million things. We have a bunch of really funny, interesting, cool people who do it, and it grows every year, and it's a lot of fun. So you know, if people would love to listen to it, like to listen to it, tolerate listening to it, we're all for that.
My favorite is the emergency podcast.
Yes,
where you have to there's an emergency that you have to get to, and then we can listen to it a week later.
Well, there's my favorite thing that we do with the emergency. So we'll do probably once a month, a major emergency will emerge in the world of sports, usually, although not always, but usually in the world of sports. And we'll be like, well, this is an emergency. We've got to get to talking about this. And then
it's an hour and a half.
It'll be an hour and a half, but we'll be 45 minutes in. We won't have mentioned one word about it.
Exactly.
One of my favorite things that we've done is we interviewed Dave Roberts from the Dodgers manager. He actually asked to come on the podcast, which is so
– he was great.
He was so funny and wonderful, and he knew exactly what the podcast was. It was really great. But my favorite thing is at the very, very end, they had just signed Shohei Ohtani. And at the very, very end of it, we're like, you know, we probably ought to ask you about Ohtani. We had spent like an hour and a half talking to him about who the best players in baseball are at hugging and like, right. you know, nonsense. And they were like, yeah, you know what? Let's actually ask you, what do you think about Ohtani coming to the Dodgers? Yeah. Which tells you the journalistic integrity that we have there at the podcast.
Right. And I was thinking a while back, I was listening to an episode like that. And I was like, man, if they would put chapter information in here, like, you know, time codes. And then I thought that would completely defeat the purpose because it would limit, especially Mike's ability to drag a joke out, right? Where he was doing one where I thought it was the Dave Roberts episode where he wanted to talk about the steal, right?
Yes, in
2004. And he kept saying, or maybe this was, I think, a mix.
No, that was exactly what it was. We kept telling him, you know what? We've talked enough about the 2004 steal. Let's talk about something else. And then he'd ask another question about the 2004 steal. Right. So the steal was like an hour of the show. It just went on and on and on. Yeah.
It deserves to be.
I mean, of course.
Anybody who was a casual baseball fan back there, I feel like everybody who wasn't a Yankees fan was rooting for the Red Sox that year just because it had been so long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it was such a cool moment. I mean, look, as somebody who doesn't like the Yankees, it was great. But even so, I mean, a team coming down 3-0 that hadn't won the World Series in 80 years, and it's like this strike, you know, this stolen bases changes everything. And I mean, it's so cool. But yeah, but your point is, you know, is right in that I think we would never put timestamps on there because like part of being a listener, if you're going to listen, like we're asking a lot of you. We're just
you have to earn it.
You have to earn it. Like if you really are going to like put yourself through it, you got to put yourself through it. It's an hour and a half. You have no idea what we're talking about. We could go in any direction. And then maybe every now and again, you'll get like a gem, like the time that we determine which vegetables would be the best NBA players. You know, like sometimes it'll just go in that direction. You'll end up with something that you know, will make you know, Pulitzer Prize winning material. But most of the time, no, that we can't promise that. I think it's part of the fun.
I am curious, Joe, if there's a podcast curse or jinx. I don't believe in them, but you did the other day, in your most recent podcast, kind of say it might be the Mariners' year.
Yeah, that was me. Mike immediately said no. So it's hard. It's hard to say that it's a curse. Maybe it's my curse. You know, I'm holding on. Yeah, I mean the Mariners are they're playing pretty good baseball for a team
without Julio doing much. Yeah.
Right. For a team that, I mean, and not just Julio. I mean, that there are a bunch of guys on that team that you're like, they could be better than that. So I love it. I mean, look, I don't know who's going to beat the Yankees. I mean, I think that's going to be awfully tough.
I know that's hard for you to say.
It is hard for me to say. The Orioles are really good. But I really, I like this Mariners team. I just kind of feel like there's a different vibe about them. Plus, that division is just—it's in shambles. I mean,
it is. It's so weird because it's always been the AL Central that's been that division.
Right.
It seems like.
Right, and now the Central's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's over 500, and then out here, I have no idea what has happened with the Astros so far this season.
Astros are a shocker. The Rangers are a mess, and then obviously Oakland and the Angels are two of the worst teams in baseball. So, I mean, it's that division suddenly. I don't know. It just everything. It's never you know this is the Mariners.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever been easy for the Mariners ever. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing. There's never been. Yeah, you know, we are just coming off of the Celtics sort of winning one of the easiest NBA titles in memory, right? Like they ran away with the East and then they won, breezed through the playoffs. And then they kind of more or less breezed through the final and won the final game by 150 or whatever it was. And like the Mariners, it's never like that, right? Like even when they won 116 games and it felt like that during the season, they immediately, you know, lose in the playoffs. I mean, it just never feels like it's going to go their way entirely. And I don't know, something about this year, they're not playing that great and yet winning. I think they have the biggest lead of anybody in any division at the moment. And I don't think that the Astros or Rangers are looking like a team that's going to perk up. I don't know. Maybe they will, but it doesn't seem that way. Feels like they could win the division with some ease and be healthy going into the playoffs. I don't know. Maybe there's some magic here.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Thinking back to the 2001 series, and I know that you're a Cleveland sports fan.
Yeah.
One of my most indelible memories from that 2001 season when they won 116 games is the game that they were up 14-2 against Cleveland and ended up blowing the lead.
That was,
and losing, I think, 15-14 or something
that was Sunday Night Baseball game, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And it was and that Cleveland team could really hit. But still, there was no reason for that. But that's what's very funny about that team is they won 116 games and lost that one. You know, I mean, like,
yeah,
I think that's the biggest comeback ever in baseball history. Certainly at the inning that they had that lead. So,
well, they also managed to score 7 runs in the top of the first against the Royals the other week and lose that game.
Yes, so. They seem to find ways, but
yeah.
But again, I'm hopeful this year.
Yeah, me too. So as we wind up here, I every year I like to read a baseball book, usually in the spring. And of course, I will recommend people read your books. But do you have any favorite baseball books that you've read over the years?
Oh, a lot. I've behind me on the shelves, there are about 400 baseball books that I loved reading. Mm. Yeah, there's so many. I mean, you go back to some of the classics. I mean, The Boys of Summer was a transformational book for me. I mean, it's the book that kind of made me want to be a writer in a lot of ways. And there have been a lot of books, baseball books, that have had that kind of impact on me. There have been a couple this year, we're talking about baseball books. There have been a couple this year that I've really enjoyed. I really enjoyed Charlie Hustle, which is sort of the latest take on Pete Rose. And even if you feel like you're all Pete Rose'd out, which I think a lot of us feel, it's really good. I mean, what I really like about it is it's sort of, it gives humanity to Pete in a way that I think is not easy to do all the time. I mean, he's such a cartoon character in so many ways, in good ways and in absolutely terrible ways. I thought that was really good. There's a book called The New York Game, which goes back into history and talks about New York baseball. It's really a lot of fun that came out this year. There's a baseball movie book that came out not too long ago that I think is really good. So it was funny. I went to the Casey Awards last year, earlier this year, but it was from last year that when I won, and they listed off the 11 books that were finalists for that. And they were they were terrific. They were really good. Yeah. Baseball still is the sport that has the best, literary sort of library. I mean, when I write about football, I didn't have nearly the same sort of clear path that I had in baseball. And baseball is it's so rich in history going, back to, not just great books like Boys of Summer and some of the classic, but player books like, Ball 4, was written and obviously books like Moneyball that are, sort of baseball centric, but are really about something larger. It's just a huge and wonderful catalog of books. And I think it's the sport that non-sports fans will read about. Like, I don't know. I'll be very interested to see what's going to happen with football because I don't have any idea. There have been some very good football books, but not that many of them, being honest. And I think football fans are not as drawn to the history as baseball fans are. But I also think that it's unlikely for a non-football fan to read a football book. But I think it is it is relatively likely for a non-baseball fan to read a baseball book because it is so tied to American history and so tied. Right. If you're a history fan, there's a good chance you would want to read a great baseball book because there's so much history in it. I think baseball writing is really great. What is interesting to me, and I, it seems like maybe I've connected that to this podcast, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm not in love most of the time with baseball fiction. And I've often thought there's no, I mean, that I've read, I've tried a few, I've not found too many magical baseball books that I've liked or science fiction-y baseball books that I've liked specific to what you talk about most of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Shoeless Joe is a little bit of that. It's certainly, you know, it's got this, you know, super
magical realism,
kind of thing. I remember there was one book by a pretty famous author, and I can't remember what it was, but it was kind of a science fiction-y, you had to play a baseball game to defeat the aliens of some kind. I can't remember exactly what it was. I didn't love it. And there have been others that have sort of, but I would love to see that. It's not possible, but I there are a few, you know, fictional baseball books. I loved, you know, The Great American Novel by Philip Roth. I loved that. And I really, enjoyed The Brothers K and The Celebrant. I mean, there have been a few fiction that I've liked, but it's really few and far between.
Yeah. I have on my list Brittle Innings by Michael Bishop, which is evidently, from what I understand from a friend who I trust, it's a very good baseball book and an excellent science fiction novel.
Ah, interesting.
And so I reached out to Lindsay from Close Call Sports, and I'm going to see if we can get that one going, because I know she's a nerd. So
I love
it. It should be fun. Yeah. Yeah. I'm drawn to, I've read a lot of pitcher biographies, autobiographies, like Knuckler by Tim Wakefield, which is really good.
It's really good.
Or R.A. Dickey's book, just because it's such an interesting story about, you know, exactly what happened to him. You know, like he comes back, starts his first game and gives up 6 home runs, something like that, and is released. And then he pitched for the Mariners. So that's kind of where my connection with him comes from.
Yeah, I love both of those books, I love the Knuckleball. So, I mean, you know, one of the great things about Jim Boughton's books is that he tried to come back as a knuckleball pitcher, and that was really fun. I mean, it's, you know, the knuckleball is probably the closest thing baseball has to its, like, sort of magic. Like, there is sort of a magical realism about, you know, I mean, it seems like if you're going to do baseball fiction, the ideas are all, not all, but a lot of them are either built around sort of the Damn Yankees novel, you know, model where, you know, somebody wishes to become the greatest player ever. And you know, the boy who hit 1,000 or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's the natural one, which is sort of the doomed, you know, star-crossed superhero baseball player and all that. So I'd love to see something that breaks out of both of those, you know, and kind of does something a little bit different.
I think that's probably just about all we need to cover today, other than when does Why We Love Football come out and how can people find it?
Yeah, Why We Love Football it's available for pre-order. It comes out September 17th. Very excited, obviously, for it to come out. We're already working on the tour. I'm going to be traveling quite a bit. It, which is going to be a lot of fun. But
are you coming to Portland?
Hopefully soon. I would love to come to Portland.
Okay, cool.
You know, the pretty good bookstore there in Portland. But and which by the way, not to give any spoilers, because I don't even know if this is a spoiler, but the Portland bookstore that we're talking about actually plays a specific role in the book. So I'm not going to say anything more than that. But yeah, so it comes out September 17th, and I think, to me, I mean, I'm excited, of course, for the book to come out, and I'm excited to see what people think of it, and I'm excited for all of it. But probably more than anything, what I'm really looking forward to is being able to talk about it, you know? I mean, because it's one of those things I could talk about it. I mean, I'm not legally bound to not say everything about it. But what I have found from writing the last couple of books is the more I say now, the more it spoils it later. You know what I mean? Like I've given you a couple. We've talked about how the drive is going to be in the book or whatever. But everybody kind of knew that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want this book, because I just literally reread it. I'm about to do the audio version of it. I'm about to narrate it. So I've kind of looked through it. And what I love about it as I reread it is you just don't know what's coming next. Like there's, there's another, the next chapter is like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that happened. Or like, what is this? I've never even heard of this. Or, oh yeah, this is, I knew this was coming. And I want that experience to be as pure and fresh as it possibly can be. Yeah. What I have found early on, and we're still months away, right, as we're talking. So the book's coming out September 17th, but already there have been some early reviews. And what I have found, they've been very kind. They've been great reviews. But what I have found in the early reviews is they can't help themselves. They have to talk about a bunch of the moments. They actually are like revealing the moments while they're talking about it, which is fine. And they should, you know, write it any way they want. But I didn't notice that in baseball as much. In baseball, it felt like people were talked about it in a much more general way in the reviews. And in this one, they're very specifically like, oh, and number 47 is this and this and this and this. And I remember when I was at this and this and this and this, you know, which is fun. And I'm hoping that'll be a harbinger for things ahead and that people are just going to really get excited about the moments.
Nice. And for pre-orders, are you doing signed books and that kind of stuff as well?
There are going to be some signed books available. I think Barnes & Noble, for instance, I think has a signed books option. I was doing signed and inscribed books, but that ended Father's Day. So now if you want a signed and inscribed book, you know, the best bet would probably be to come see me when hopefully I'm near your town. But there will be signed books everywhere. But as far as pre-orders beyond that go, every Barnes & Noble, Amazon, independent bookstores are where I want people to go if they can. You can go to Indie Books and find one, or go into your local bookstore. That's my favorite thing. What I'm trying to do is, as I'm traveling the country, which I am doing a lot of for another project that I can't talk about yet, is go into the local bookstores and sign the books they have.
Just pull them off the shelves and sign them.
I usually tell them I'm there and say, hey, I'm here. Do you want me to sign your books? And people have been incredibly kind and excited to see me. And it's been really a fun little thing that I've been doing, but go into your local bookstore and they might have a signed copy of Why We Love Baseball. And maybe I'll be in there to sign something for Why We Love Football as well.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, Joe, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for doing this. It's a nerdy podcast, and I feel like baseball just it sits right in that nerdy pocket, and it's been wonderful to talk to you.
It's been great. Thank you.
All right. Take care. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Cuskey.